Nation, welcome to episode 808 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, we interview CRA-2 at a European CRO. Her name is Tiomira Nikolova, and she's actually somebody who's super accomplished. She's came up from the ranks as working tech support for research companies on the tech side. So it was help desk analyst. So she quickly learned platforms like Veeva, Metadata, and then she became a clinical research associate, and then associate one, and then associate two. And now she's even has a CRA wizard. It's kind of like the CRA Academy. And she does a lot of one-on-one career consultations, especially with people in Europe. So check it out. Super accomplished person. Very glad to have had her on the show. Also, really quickly, thank you to our sponsors, Inato. Inato is a place to get studies for your site. We're getting another site selection visit because of Inato. I've had good experiences with them. They're absolutely free. Doesn't cost you anything. They don't get involved with contracts and budgets. I love Inato. I think every site that has therapeutic area expertise should check it out. Link in the show notes. Also, shout out to Creo. Creo is doing amazing things. They can really automate your operations. I mean, I've been using it for about 3 years. I still don't know all the functionalities. I'm still learning because they're always innovating with new ways to make the processes easier. Recently, I was connecting my Patient Ace API with Creo's, where we get patient leads from outside of Creo, but they're automatically imported into Creo. So we're learning how to do that. It's amazing. Check it out. Link in the show notes. Hopefully, you enjoy the episode with Tihomira, and let me know what you think. Bye bye. Guru Nation, this is a very special episode all the way from Bulgaria. Tihomira Nikolova. This person, like out of nowhere, one morning, every morning, I check LinkedIn. I try to look, what can I post that's funny? Funny meme. I just try to post before I go to the clinic. And one morning, I saw like all these notifications. I'm like, what's going on? It's more than usual. And it's all started from Tihomira's post where she's on the cover of a magazine. Her article was published. And I was like, wow, this person's cool. I don't know why I'm tagged, but let me look into her. And then I realized the post, like she's writing about me. And I'm like watching it, looking by myself, and I'm like blushing by myself. Like, what? How is this possible? I gotta get you on the podcast. You're obviously super accomplished. You're a CRA-2 at a CRO in Europe, Eastern Europe, and you've been in the CRA space for, it looks like, or you've been in the research space since like 2017, more or less.
More or
And
less, I've been around.
I mean, you're just getting started, I think. You're also the CRA wizard, which is really cool. The logo, I mean, there's a lot of symbolism here with this logo I'm looking at. Maybe that's an hour podcast just to look at the logo. But let's talk about all of this stuff. But thank you so much. Like, and congrats on your accomplishments. That was really cool to
Thank
see.
you. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor. I've been a huge fan since young CRA once upon a time,
Wow.
as you
Yeah.
found out recently from my post. And this is really amazing. I really appreciate the opportunity that, well, internet is freaking amazing.
Internet's amazing. For all the bad that we hear mostly about the bad, there's a lot of good stuff. Like meeting, I had no idea my reach was global until like a few years ago.
It is.
I didn't
It
re
is
like
definitely.
and I told you before the interview, if I knew like that in the future all these CRAs would have started from the video, I don't think I would have started because it's like a huge responsibility. Like I don't know. A lot of the times people disagree with me. Oh, and this is actually not correct. This is this. But the point is, like, not the details, it's the big picture. Like, the big picture, I'm pretty confident I'm correct on the thesis of how to get started, the fundamental. And then once you're in, you got to figure out details on your own. But
Definitely, you are. I can confirm.
thank you so much. I mean, it means a lot to me. And now that I'm more aware, like, you know, I try to produce better stuff, and a lot of it's interviewing experts like yourself on. So thank you. You're now sharing the responsibility.
No, thank you. Honestly, your work is amazing and it has been amazing and it helped me a lot throughout my career, and I'm sure it helped you many, many, many other people. So it's really
Thank you.
amazing seeing
Thank you
you
for that.
and being able to talk to you in person almost. So
Almost. You
yeah.
got to come out. You ever come out to any conferences here, or is it just the Europe ones?
No, not really. I think the last conference I've been on was the Gastroenterology European Conference last year.
Okay.
It
Those
was
are the
in
better
Vienna.
ones anyways. The like
Yeah.
therapeutic area, I like those better. But like they don't do like ACRP or SOCRA or MAGI over there like in Europe?
They do it occasionally, not so much in the recent years. I feel that after COVID, there were not that many conferences. And actually, this was one of the reasons that I started Clinical Research Bulgaria Community and started organizing these events myself.
Wow.
Because I was searching for events to go on and to have some networking and to mingle with people in our space. And I always felt they were coming short in terms of there were no conferences. So at some point, I've just decided that I'm going to start organizing events. So actually, next month, we are celebrating 1 year since my first event.
Wow,
And
congrats.
so thank you. So in May, Clinical Research Bulgaria is turning one. So we're going to have a little birthday celebration locally in
Wow.
Sofia.
That's big time. Like, there's a robust. I was talking to you again before the show about Eastern Europe specifically, and it's over the last decade, it become a hotbed for research because there's a lot of talented people.
Definitely.
I mean, my parents are both doctors from Romania. Like, I know in those countries, they take education and still do seriously. Unlike maybe
That's
in the
true.
West, you know, in the West, we kind of slipped off of that a train. But in the Eastern Europe, it's like they seriously still value education, especially the STEM topic. So it makes sense that there's a clinical research infrastructure in Eastern Europe, similar to Latin America. Latin America in the last decade,
Yeah.
exploding. I just came back from Mexico City. You would think you're in North Carolina with all the research that was over there. Unbelievable.
I actually have never had any experience with Latin America, but I've read a lot about it,
You would
and
love
I
it.
really,
You would love it.
yeah.
It's similar to Eastern Europe, but like with a Latin flair, obviously. But you
With the
would love
Latin
it.
vibe.
Latin
Yeah, I
vibe
think
for
I'm gonna
sure.
love it.
Yeah, you would love it. So how did you actually get started though? Because I imagine it's similar to the US where it's not something that's known. You have to like find it by accident, or how did you discover it?
Not at all. So I was 17 and I was still in high school, and since I was in science high school, natural high school of science and maths, I was profile biology, and basically I was figuring out what's going to be next, and I knew I wanted a career that's going to be a dynamic. It's going to be in pharmaceutical sector, and I knew that definitely I did not want it to work as a pharmacist.
Okay.
So naturally, then I
Why?
went to medical school,
Why
because
you didn't
when I
want
was
pharmacists?
because when I was younger, it seemed like the most boring job in the world. I remember
Yeah.
my parents taking me to pharmacies occasionally to buy some drugs and stuff. And I remember that each time I was thinking, man, this must be the most boring job in the world. So
Yeah.
fast forward, I went to medical school and started studying pharmacy.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I already knew about clinical research space. I've done a lot of research on the internet, and basically I was trying to figure out what it is, how to start, what are the different positions, different roles, the whole concept, the idea, a brief overview of clinical trials. And as you know, back in the days, there was absolutely no information about it. And each time when you actually try to ask someone like a teacher or another grown-up person what actually it is, they were looking at you like you're an alien. So yeah, eventually I found out about clinical research, monitoring in specific, and then I later on I found you, and I've decided, okay, I want to be a CRA. So now, how do I do that?
And how did you?
Well, definitely, I was looking into the bigger picture. I did realize I do need a combination of both background and a little bit of experience just to get a hand on what's clinical trials, how the whole thing is working. So that's why I went to medical school. And at the time I was working full time, and I started pursuing jobs that actually is going to get me one step closer to becoming just a tiny part of the clinical research space. So at the beginning, I started working in one company that's called C3i. I'm not sure if it's still the name. So basically, I was working as a support analyst for Veeva, Medidata, different IWRS systems or EDC systems. So I was on the other end of the execution process. But this gave me a great overview and a great experience because it did provide me with some good experience in clinical trials in terms of what works, how, and which role is doing what. I was in daily communication with a lot of CRAs, and also my favorite position, drug supply manager.
Wow, yeah, because that's so the pharmacy related. So you were working with all these vendors. You were saying Veeva, Medidata. So you that's interesting how that was your beginning, was working with these portals, because mostly people get started and then they're given access, to the various portals. But you started like the opposite almost.
Yeah, I was supporting all of these systems for different projects and different protocols. And it was great. It was great for a stepping stone in my career. But then I knew I wanted to be a CRA and nothing less. It was my dream job. So I continue applying to different positions, and I faced a whole lot of rejection in the process. It was really frustrating because I remember telling all of my colleagues that one day I'm going to be a CRA and they're going to be the ones receiving emails from me. I'm going to be on the other side and I'm going to be, okay, just wait and see. And everyone just laughed at me. They're like, no way.
Why, it was like, is it unattainable to be a CRA? Or at that time, or it's like very competitive.
Back in the days, first of all, there were not that many CRA positions. And second of all, no one really knew how you become a CRA. It was a little bit of a mystery around it. But yeah, not so much of a
You
mystery
almost
really.
need like a wizard to help you, right?
Exactly. Yeah, pun intended. I like that.
You almost need a wizard to figure out how to be a CRA. Maybe still the case today. So how did you actually become it though? Did you apply, or what, did somebody see you and ask you, or how did that work?
I've applied and applied to numerous positions. And one day I remember at the evening while I was walking my dog in the park, and one lady called me, and she was the recruiter from a small CRO in Bulgaria. They are called Balkan Trials. They were great, really amazing people. And she was like, yeah, we're interested in eventually hiring you. Would you like to come for an interview?
Wow.
And I almost lost my shit.
Was
I
it the
was so
owner, or
freaking
the
happy.
like the director, or who called you, like the person that owns it, or?
No, it was the HR director.
Okay.
So yeah, then I went on an interview with the CEO. I remember I was extremely, extremely nervous, as I've never really had previous CRA experience or coordinator experience or assistant experience. So yeah, but I was very enthusiastic, extremely motivated, eager to learn, and ready to
They
take
must have
on
liked
the
that
challenge.
you, they probably liked that you use the systems already, right? Like Veeva and all
Yeah, they
this.
really like that. They really like that because at the time he was doing some integrations, and he really needed someone with in-depth knowledge of exactly how the system worked. So it was actually a huge plus, which back then I did not quite realize, but it was a very lucky coincidence that it happened in this way. So yeah, next thing you know, that on Monday I started as a CRA. On Friday I had my first visit.
Wow, by yourself, or you shadow with someone?
No, with shadow, obviously. But he gave me the car keys, and he's like, "Okay, there you go. Here is your car. Here is your laptop. Good luck."
Good luck. So initially the sites were in Bulgaria, like all around Sofia, or
Yes, they're in Bulgaria. And yeah, remember, Steve, I was so nervous. I had no idea what I was doing. Luckily, my superior knew better than me. I
right.
remember I crashed the car on my first visit on the parking lot in front of the hospital.
Seriously.
Yeah, seriously.
So you just like you hit another car or something and
Yeah. The other car was
wow.
not even moving. I was just trying to go on reverse, and then I just crashed.
Wow, that was like must have been like a odd omen for your future, but obviously didn't apply because your career thrived since then. How did you evolve into CRA 2, and like how did that work? How many sites do you go outside of Bulgaria? How did you kind of grow your career after that?
Right. So I spent more than almost 2 years in Balkan trials at the time. And afterwards, I've decided to move to a bigger CRO. So this is when I started with PSI. I initially started as a CRA one. And then a little while afterwards, I transferred to CRA two. So at the moment, I'm monitoring only in Bulgaria. I've never monitored other countries, although I
Wow.
do have some colleagues who do that. And I think it's fascinating, but also very challenging because there is some language barrier. It definitely depends if you're reading source files in Bulgarian or let's say in Serbian or in English or any other language. I
Yeah.
mean, even if you do know some of the languages, as you know, many of the Eastern European languages, they sound and look the same, but it's still challenging when it comes to medical terminology and reading medical charts. So
Course. I was
yeah.
always curious how that works in Europe because all the countries are so close. If you, English is just the universal language, or you can't expect
It
hospitals
is.
to use, like, do hospitals use English as the language for their notes, or they just use the local language,
No,
huh?
of course not. They use local language in almost all cases. So English is universal in terms that they could all communicate quite well in English, including the investigators, especially the younger generation of investigators. They speak English quite well, but they also do go to a lot of conference. They're in constant communication with the study team, etc. But in terms of documentation and source files and notes and everything, it's in Bulgarian, obviously. So I was also really curious how, when you have an audit on site, the auditor is never Bulgarian. Well, none of the audits that I had, the auditor was Bulgarian, and they knew perfectly well what is written on each page of the source file without even speaking Bulgarian. So I was
I
like,
mean, I
wow.
don't understand how they must be just Google Translate the whole sheet, the whole document.
Yeah.
We're not far from where
No.
like the documents can be uploaded and then translated, I think, into any language. I think what that's going to be
Yeah.
like a in 2 3 years, I think that's going to be like
It's
automatic.
even now, long live ChatGPT 4.
Yeah, that's true. Even now. Yeah, 'cause I know when I went to
Yeah.
Mexico City a few months ago, I visited and everyone, like, well, everyone who worked in research spoke English like perfect, like you. But
Wow,
then at the
nice.
clinics, when you go, you know, it's like not everyone at the clinic does speak English, right? It's all Spanish and they write everything in Spanish. So you do have to have working knowledge of both English to speak with to the sponsors and then to your colleagues, but Spanish to speak to the site at the site level. So yeah, it sounds like it's similar, the same exact thing over there.
Do you speak Spanish?
See? Yeah, now that I live in
No?
a border town in Yuma, Arizona, we're like 30 minutes from Mexico. So like every weekend we go. My wife is
Oh,
Mexican.
nice.
Yeah, so we go, like her dad lives still in Mexico. So yeah, I've been learning a lot of Spanish since I've lived in Arizona these last 3 years. A lot. So semi-fluent. I think fluent. The only thing missing maybe is the jokes. The jokes are the hardest.
Oh, yeah,
Once you
because
learn
you
the
need to have the
humor,
context.
yeah, once you get the humor, you're like fluent, fluent. But I'm almost there. I'm almost there. I
So
can
how
make
would you rate the
people.
experience of having a Mexican wife?
Oh, it's amazing.
What would you recommend to anyone who's marrying a Mexican girlfriend?
Wow.
Any tips?
Well, yeah, like don't argue is number one. Like just don't argue with her. But
I
like
think
the
that's
food,
universal.
that's maybe universal. The food is amazing though. Like, and then the culture is still similar to Eastern Europe where family is priority, you know, and I think in the Western world we kind of lost track of that. We tend to prioritize like individualism instead of family, which is I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's also like the reason for the progress. It's just there always needs to be balance, you know, and I think like in the US, especially in the states where there's like a lot of immigrant or like Hispanic influence, you do have a little bit of both worlds, right? And I think I like that mix.
Sounds amazing. Seems
Yeah.
like you found your place under the sun.
I think so. I definitely sun. I'm in the sunniest place in the world, Yuma, Arizona. If you don't believe me, guys, Google it. Yuma, Arizona, Yuma, sunniest place on earth. So CRA wizard, right? That's like a Harry Potter type of thing. Like,
I'm very glad you mentioned it. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan.
well, you must be with this logo. So you got the double helix, you've got the wizard hat, but the wizard hat is also shaped like a beaker.
It's actually the hat from Harry Potter, the sorting hat.
Yeah, that for sure I can see that. I subscribe to the CRA Wizard newsletter, but
I'm very glad.
this is cool. Like you publish monthly
I
articles.
try
Like
to.
your last one was revolutionizing clinical research, innovative trial designs, CRA interview prep. Are most of your audience members from Bulgaria or from Europe or all over the place?
Actually, all over the place, and I also find it very amazing because right now I have 300, no, sorry, 3,000 subscribers.
Yeah, I see that.
So it's really peculiar to me because each time when I go to an event and I don't know anyone, and when I go to someone and I introduce myself, last time it was during an investigator meeting 2 months ago in Monaco. So we were starting a new study. So actually, it was my first investigator meeting in person, and I was extremely excited. And I was going around the room, and I wanted to speak to everyone. And when I was introducing myself, and everyone were like, "I know who you are. I'm reading your blog." And I was like, "Really?"
Wow. That's a interesting feeling to have.
It felt really weird, and very often I connect with people all around the world, and it's very surprising to me, as it is to you, that so many people are actually following me, because 3K does not sound that much, but
It's a lot.
when you actually think about it, that all of these people are actually reading your articles and following you and engaging with you. It's really an amazing feeling, and I'm so grateful for that. And
You have one post recently, one-on-one career consultations, your personal guide to navigating your career. Ghosted by recruiters, don't know how to prepare, fear not, book your slot. Like right
when
now,
you read it
Tamer.
out loud, it
No,
sounds so cringe.
it's not cringe. It's actually good. That's what works for LinkedIn. But right now, the market is probably in Europe, it's similar. There was like a big hiring frenzy after COVID, and then at least at the CRO and sponsor level, and now there's like a hiring freeze almost at
That's
those
true.
levels. At the site, it's not the case. Tomorrow for my site, we're interviewing eight people to see because we need another coordinator. I think the sites are in a different world, but the CROs and sponsors, I think they are not hiring right now. And what are your experiences with this? Or is that the case? In Bulgaria, maybe that's not the case.
I think it's the same way in Bulgaria as well. Actually, I was hired during COVID with PSI. However, right now I think things became a little bit more challenging and more difficult. The criteria are even more strict than they used to be. It's very, very hard to break into the industry. You need to have background. In almost all cases, you need to have some sort of life science or medical degree, and you need to have at least 1 2 years of experience as a CRA in order to be hired as a CRA. And it's becoming more and more challenging, I think. And since I have so many friends and colleagues from university or people asking me all the time, how can I become a CRA? How can I get a job in clinical trials? And where do I start? And this is why I started these career consultations. They are actually inspired by your CRA Academy, but
Thank you.
mine is not, it's not yet full-blown CRA Academy, but at this point, I am able to provide consultations during which I speak with people on different matters, depends on what is their current condition, what kind of role they're aiming to, if it's a CRA or something different, let's say in regulations, in affairs, medical affairs, different sort of roles. And then basically we go through the whole process. How do you break into or how do you excel in your career in clinical trials?
There's probably a huge need for this in Europe because it's so, the country is obviously fragmented into different countries, or the continent's fragmented into different countries. So you have different
Yes.
roadmaps and pathways for everyone. But ultimately, I think there is no real resource in Europe until I came across your profile and I said, oh, okay, this is perfect because people need this there. What's like the biggest mistake people make when they're trying to get started and they fail?
I feel like there are a few mistakes. Actually, that's a really good idea for an article, so I'm gonna write one about this.
Yeah.
I feel like there are a few mistakes in general. First of all, people underestimate the CRA role. So I feel like the biggest mistake people are making is they're thinking that this is an entry-level position, which isn't. That's not the case. So especially people from medical school, because people who are only studying in medical school, which is great achievement by itself, but if they've never worked in the industry before that, they got the idea that as soon as they graduate, okay, you have your medical diploma or pharmacy diploma, and then great, I'm gonna go to an interview to the first company and I'm gonna get hired as a CRA. It does not work like that. Definitely does not work like that. So you do need to understand the industry and you do need the relevant combination of background and experience in order to get hired as a CRA nowadays, I think. So instead, you could try with a different position just to break into the industry. You could obviously start as a coordinator. That's a really, really great crucial role. So you're gonna be in contact with all aspects of the work and you're gonna get familiar with the clinical trial protocol, all of the systems, all the regulations, all of the processes. You're going to work closely with the CRAs, etc. So that's a great point where you could start from, or as a assistant to the CRA. This is also another role, or anything else that it's, well, actual entry-level position within the industry. So I think that's the first major mistake that people are making. And the other one, I think, is people can handle rejection, which is a huge
Yeah.
part of the game. And I know it's extremely, extremely overwhelming. And in order to become a CRA around here, you need to apply to at least 200 jobs. And out of these 200 jobs, eventually you're gonna speak with maybe 5 to 10 recruiters. And then eventually, if you're lucky, you're gonna get 2 3 interviews. And eventually, if you're lucky, you're gonna get one job offer or two
Yeah.
job offers.
And that's with
So
that's after you get experience, like as a coordinator or something else related to research, that's
it's a
after.
lot easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you know, you started working with these systems first, then you
Yeah.
got hired. And here it's the same mistakes then I'm seeing here. It's a, I think this is just universal. Like one of the mistakes even they make at the site level, so your advice to apply as a coordinator. A lot of people take that. I give the same advice, coordinator. The issue is they just apply, like they click, sit on LinkedIn and click, Or they go on these job boards and just click 100 and then that's it. Like, that's
Yeah.
not gonna work. You have to go to the site, like in person. You have to study that site. They all have a website. You can see what studies they do. Like, you can see the therapeutic areas. If they don't show the actual studies, they show the therapeutic area. Most of the clinics, at least here in US, have at least a Facebook or an Instagram or something social media. I would assume similar in Europe.
Not at all, at least
Not
not
at
in
all.
Bulgaria.
Not in both. Here they do, except the academic medical centers don't, but the private sites, they all have at least an
Private size,
Instagram.
yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
they have to. That's the way you, the only competitive advantage you have. And they post on these. Look, I'm going to show you guys mine so you guys can see. Because this actually annoys me. That, look, this is ours, Yuma Clinical Trials, right? We have
Yeah,
like
I've seen your
media.
Instagram.
Yeah, like we post. Okay, diabetes. So, okay, look at that post. We probably do diabetes study. Look at this one, atopic derm. We probably do atopic derm study. Otherwise, why would we post this one, COPD? We probably do COPD. But when you come to the site to get interviewed, you don't know anything of what we do. Even more so, you should know, okay, if it's COPD, you should know common medications, common assessments that all studies share with COPD. You work in
Yeah.
GI and oncology, there's common assessments for no matter what study, if it's a Crohn's, if it's irritable bowel, you're gonna have colonoscopy, you're gonna have all kinds of things, like different assessments. And people, like, it's not that hard to study this stuff. You just have to go a little bit deeper than everyone else. And they don't
Yeah,
put the
that's true.
effort like everyone else. If you put the same effort as everyone else, you're going to get the same results as everyone else. You put a little bit deeper effort, you're going to get a little bit deeper results.
This is, I completely agree with you on that. And this is something that I always advise my clients. And it is to be proactive and to do the extra mile, because this is precisely the thing that is going to separate you from the rest of the pile CVs or the rest of the candidates. And plus, you're going to learn something useful and interesting. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you're truly interested in it, you're gonna, it's not even gonna be like work for you. Like, if you're actually interested in GI or oncology, I mean, you're gonna actually like your research that you do.
Yes.
So as a CRA too, can you kind of just give a overview of the things you do, like the difference between CRA1 and CRA2 maybe?
In my experience, CRA2 is in general handling more complicated protocols, is assigned more studies, is assigned more sites, and it is a lot more involved within the startup phase. With feasibility, preparation, agreements, stuff like that, or at least this is what I do. Currently, I am handling six different studies
Wow.
and lots of sites.
Lots of sites. Like, how many?
Let me count. No, actually, right now, not more than nine, so that's all right.
Still got them. 9 sites, six
No.
studies.
Yeah. And,
Yeah.
the protocols I'm working on are quite complicated, especially I have one protocol which is on Crohn's disease, and it's complicated. Definitely, definitely, this is the most complicated study that I've ever worked on. But the major difference is, I think, in terms of job responsibilities. I've also been involved in feasibility, contracting, well, not so much contracting, but yeah, helping the startup team with preparing agreements, stuff like that. And
Wow.
I've also enjoyed reaching out to sites and including them in the study myself, because I like finding new talents among the PIs.
Really? Okay, so
Yeah.
you go it th throughout Bulgaria and look for like potential sites.
Not go, but I reach out over the phone, I speak
Yeah.
with them, I contact them. Yeah. And then eventually, if they're interested, then I
Then you
go,
go.
yes,
Yeah.
to evaluate the site. And if they're serious about
Wow.
that, if they like the protocol. And I really like that. I
So you're
really like
almost like a
that.
medical science liaison because over here the big drug companies, they have sales
Yeah.
reps that go, but then in charge of the sales rep is usually a pharmacist. We keep coming back to pharmacist, but there's a pharmacist that is called the medical science liaison, and they have like one foot in research, one foot in sales. And there, if you're a new site and you want to work with, let's say, Eli Lilly, you should find your
Yeah.
medical science liaison in your territory. There's usually one person in charge of like entire state. And that's the person that you need to talk to. And then eventually they come visit. So you're doing this role as well.
Yes and no. In Bulgaria, we also do have medical science liaison.
Okay.
Actually, my mentee just recently got the job as a medical science liaison,
See?
which I was
Are
very
they a
happy about.
pharmacist?
Yes, he's a
See?
pharmacist.
I'm telling you guys are awesome. That's a good job.
So yeah, but here medical science liaison is, I think, more on the sales sector, and it's in general being handled only by sponsor companies.
Yeah,
In
here too, here
CROs,
too.
there is no such position, but they're not that involved in the clinical research aspect. I mean, they could be involved in terms of discussing the investigator brochure or the mechanism of the drug and these kind of things, but they're definitely not in charge of reaching out to sites and asking them if they want to be part of clinical trial.
Right. And that's what you guys do as your CRO. That's actually a really proactive move. We don't have too many CROs, I think, that actually do that anymore, which is sad. They just rely on their feasibilities.
Really?
We never
I'm really
have
surprised by
CROs.
that.
We never have CRO reach out and say, hey, I want to learn more about you. I mean, we'll get like a feasibility from a CRO I never heard of once in a while. But like, we
Yeah.
never have like the big ones or even the smaller ones say, hey, do you do this therapeutic area? Like, I add a new PI every year, maybe one or two new investigators. So we have new specialists all the time, but they don't never ask. Like, nobody ever asks. So I have to go find those studies and do the surveys
Right.
for my site. No, but I wish somebody like you would find me. Like, that would be amazing. I think they should be doing this, CROs.
Well, keep in mind that Bulgaria is a really small country, so
Yeah.
it's not that difficult to find someone or to reach out or to find someone who knows someone in order to get in touch and then to, well, take a look into their experience and then just have
Yeah.
a chat whether
But
they're
you would
interested or
think these
not.
CROs here in the US, they would have at least in every state someone that does what you just said, like look for new sites from the CRO level, like be like a medical science liaison before the CRO. And they don't do this. I think they rely on the sites to do that for them. So it might be more competitive here as far as like sites are concerned, because there are much more
Yeah,
private.
perhaps. I think that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but also this is a huge part usually of the startup team job. But occasionally the CRA could also do it.
That's interesting. So what's next for you? Like, what are you? You have CRA Wizard. You obviously like teaching and doing consulting with people one-on-one.
Yeah.
What, you're young in your career. I mean, you say back in the day, but you just started not that long ago. What's next? What do you have like planned for yourself as far as your career? Like, what do you like to do in this space?
To be honest, right now, this is a really tough question as I am currently leaving PSI and I'm looking for new job opportunities. I
Okay.
still haven't found the next big thing that
Your
I'd like to
LinkedIn's
do.
underneath.
Yeah, so
Everybody get a hold of Tia Amira.
if anyone's interested,
You see her English, it's amazing. Might be better than mine.
oh, seriously, doubt that.
There's you guys need to go consider her. So I think you can do like a lot for even like pharma companies. You doesn't look like you worked for a pharma company, but like a sponsor.
No, I've never worked with a sponsor company. But as I told you, the sponsor companies usually tend to hire people with only pharmacy or medical diploma. And that's the thing that I never completely graduate medical school. So I'm a pharmacy graduate, but I never completed. So that's the
But
reason that I never worked with a sponsor company.
I see. I think in the
Yeah.
US, I mean, you would probably still get hired, but like they wouldn't make you medical monitor. You'd have to have like an MD or a PharmD.
Probably,
But
yeah.
yeah, but there's
But
other
as I
there's so
told you
many other
here, the
roles.
criteria are extremely strict about
Yeah.
that. So,
CTM maybe project manager. I was talking to someone yesterday that was trying to be a CTM. I actually can't remember who now, but somebody, and they were like really close to getting to that point because they were a CRA. The dude from the United Kingdom. He's a CRA too as well.
oh yeah.
I don't know
Yeah,
if you saw that.
I watched his video.
He wants to be a
He was a cool
CTM or
guy.
project manager. Yeah, he seems cool. This is what's awesome about LinkedIn and social media is like we can network and learn from each other. And hey, I'm looking for a role. And I mean, it seems like you're really good at networking. So I think you should be in a good situation.
Thank you. Yeah, to be honest, I'm not too much in a hurry to find the next thing, but that's the thing that all my life, CRA has been my dream job. And recently I just reevaluated. So right now I'm still figuring out what will be the next big thing. To be honest, I'm extremely, extremely interested in clinical research. This is my passion. And I really, really love doing that. It's just that I'm not quite sure exactly if I'd like to stay in this small field of expertise, or I'd like to expand a bit further. I'm very interested in generating innovations and even startup space and medtech and biotech companies, and how these two worlds could be integrated together. So
Yeah.
I guess I'll figure that out.
I am too. I love biotech space. I'm always studying like the new companies that I'm excited about. Mainly from my investment perspective, but from like obviously the science is what you analyze. So that I find the biotech a lot of opportunities as well. Are there biotech in Bulgaria?
There are some biotech companies in Bulgaria, especially there are some really cool startups in biotech space. Actually, there is one startup in the medtech space that you know. It's TrialHub, Maya.
I
You
Maya,
know her?
of course,
Yeah.
yeah. It's just yes, for sure. I've interviewed Maya before, and she is that you're right. See, Bulgaria is like robust on its own right. That's true, Maya. And does she come to your events, networking events? Do you guys network together?
Yeah, sometimes actually first few events we organized together, but they're still coming to the events. Yeah, she's a very impressive lady.
Yeah, I like her. Everyone likes her. Everybody likes her. That's really
Yeah.
cool. Well, we
What
look
about you?
forward.
What's the next big thing for you?
My site here in Yuma, we're expanding it. We are getting in the US, there's a lot of venture capital that are interested in buying sites. I don't necessarily want to jump to that as my first answer, but with the valuations that like we're getting, it's ridiculous not to consider it. And my staff, they're aware, more or less. My first priority is make sure that my staff's taken care of because they're like my team. We're a small team. So, and luckily, the people who are interested in buying sites, they have no interest in letting people go. They need actually more people. So
Yeah.
I'm my goal is to expand the site this year and explore like opportunities to either sell or like a hybrid. Sell some, but remain as part of the larger network, like so that when they grow it, I still have ownership in it. And then honestly, biotech, like you, biotech is, I've been doing clinical research at the site level for 2 decades. I've been a CRA for like 3 to 5 years during that time, like as a contract CRA. So I've actually monitored like you oncology and GI. And some psych as
Nice.
well. I've monitored some Alzheimer's
Me
and
too.
Alzheimer's and
Yeah.
depression. There's a lot of depression studies too. Like a lot of my site right now, Yuma, has a lot of depression studies. We just got offered like 4 depression studies in the last month. So we're gonna have like if you screen
Yeah.
fail on this one, you get this one. You could try all of them. I think it's good. Biotech though for me is something I've been focused on. I'm a fan. I enjoy watching the stocks of the biotech companies. because when they have something innovative, all the innovation's coming from the biotech. It's not coming from pharma.
Exactly.
Pharma's just
Exactly.
buying the biotech. They're not innovating anymore.
That's the thing, and this is why I'm very excited about the biotech space. So I think that's the
And
future. That's the
also
future
the
of
tech.
medicine.
I've been doing some advising for tech startups in research. So there's an AI company that we're working with, Select IQ. I'm an advisor. They're looking at EMRs, but with AI. So they train the AI on certain studies, and then they find you the patients automatically.
Oh, okay. So they're evaluating basically, they're doing pre-screening of patients in
Basically,
general.
but like imagine like 10,000 patient in a database. You don't know where to start. You just get lucky and
Wow.
find one. This is going to show you all of them that are likely to qualify, and they give them like a score. So now you don't have to waste your time looking. Now you just
Sounds
call,
great.
call, text. And then there's another company I'm an advisor with, but I can't really say much what they do, but it also involves AI. And they're not ready to release yet, but we're working with it. So my site is like a playground for these tools. So I enjoy advising and ha having like a stake in the company as well. That kind of stuff is, of course, these podcasts. I mean, I don't think I'll ever stop doing this stuff. It's too fun.
The podcast is amazing, and I think that you're always podcasting with very interesting people, and you're meeting people from all around the world, and you get different
Yeah.
perspectives. So that's really interesting.
It's so cool. Like, I wouldn't trade this for anything. But I think the sites, even if I sell this one, there will be more sites. I think that's in my DNA to start sites and grow them. But on this one, I'm actually in the trenches with the coordinator. Like, I'm doing everything they do. I draw blood. I still draw blood today. I call patients. I buy them sandwiches. I bring dry ice. Like,
But
I do everything the coordinators do as well.
I think that's the best approach because you have very hands-on approach with your sites, and ultimately this is what makes your sites that successful.
And I think it's what keeps the coordinators around because I never ask them anything that I haven't done. And so, you have some managers that have never done what they're asking you to do. That's not the case with me. I tell them everything I'm asking you to do, I've done it myself. And I know if you're telling me it's too much work, I know because I've done it if it's too much work or not. And so
I think that's a
having that
crucial point.
relationship, yeah, more managers need that. And I think when these big companies start buying sites, I think that dynamic is going to change. But,
Not
that becomes
necessarily. Not
hopefully not.
necessarily.
Hopefully not. They need to bring
You
the
could
right
still
people.
keep your culture.
Well, they need to bring people like you to advise them. That's what they need.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But this is a crucial point for coordinators, and this is something I've been facing throughout my career in many, many sites and studies. It's just that coordinators are constantly leaving, and they're usually
Yeah.
switching on 6 months or 1 year interval because usually they're overworked, and they give them like 36 protocols to handle at once, which is
36. I'm gonna show my
I'm
coordinators
not even
this
joking. This
video.
is just
Wow.
It's ridiculous amount of work, and each time I go on a visit or I call them for some queries or anything, and every time they're so overwhelmed and so overworked. Not in all sites is like that, but in some sites that is the case. And so I find myself in a situation that I constantly have to train new study coordinators over and over again, but then they just burn out so fast.
Yeah, or they get recruited to be CRAs and
Yeah, or they get recruited.
then the site needs to continue. We're always interviewing, hiring more. We've been able to keep, luckily, this current four coordinators for a while. I don't think they're leaving anytime soon. But
Yeah,
in
because
the
you have nail salon next to your
Oh, you saw
clinic.
that. Yeah, we got the nail salon there. You know who opened in the next office? I have to do a podcast there. Is the oxygen tank. So they're like, you go in this thing that looks like a submarine for an hour. I'm gonna do a podcast from inside there, and
You definitely should.
I will. And you get like pure oxygen for like an hour, I haven't done it yet, but they say you sleep so good, you feel so good afterwards that you could do it once a week, once a month, however long you want to do it. They have like that's the new business that opened in the other suite next to us. So you got the nail, and then you got, and it's about the same price. So if you don't want your nails done, we'll get you some oxygen. There's a lot of good neighbors we have in that building.
I'm just thinking this is so great for diving. I mean, it's a great prep before you go diving, so
True, true. Yeah, O2 Rejuvenation, that's right. And there's a few other businesses there. But yeah, the retention's very important for the staff, because if you take care of the staff, they will take care of the patients. You know, otherwise this manager is going to have to do all the work. I don't mind doing it myself, but the goal is to have a business, right? Not a job. Like,
right.
I don't need a job for me. I need a business. And so working on building the system is important. You got to take care of your staff in order to have a business. Otherwise, you don't have a business.
I really like your mindset. I mean, you have the mindset of a good leader, and not many people have that.
Thank you.
So.
Yeah, I think greed gets in the way of a lot, but
Maybe.
the irony is that if you actually do this, you'll make more, but people are so short-sighted. Oh no, I can't invest because it's uncertain. Okay, well, then you're never going to see what's on the other side. I mean, yeah, and just like at jobs, you were saying rejection. I mean, in business, you will fail as well.
Especially in business.
Yeah. And it's a matter of just knowing when to say, okay, I lost, but I learned, and time to do it differently, time to figure out how else it's gonna work. Like, why did I fail? A lot of time it's your own fault, no one else.
How do you usually hire your people? How do you choose your team?
It's happening tomorrow again.
Yeah.
So we're doing my wife does HR. Thank God.
Okay.
Thank God. The staff we have currently, this is bad. I never told anyone outside of our work. Everyone that applied through Indeed, it's the website.
Yeah.
We get all these applications. I kid you not, okay? I'm not a mean person. I put everyone in the trash. Everyone. No, 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 no,
Really?
no. Yeah. Because I know, here's why. We have four people. I'm so careful about who's this next person. I don't want to bring anyone. That's the problem. And my wife goes in the trash can and rescues people. So then
That's
she's
nice of
like,
her.
no, this one you got to interview. So tomorrow we have eight. And I'm really like, hire slow and fire fast is like my strategy. I haven't had to fire anyone in Yuma, but hire really slow, even if it means not to hire right now. And, she's good at like seeing the potential on paper. And then when we interview, I'm like, you know what? I'm glad you took this one from the trash can because then now that she's here, you know, we have most of our staff ended up from the trash can to the coordinator. And
You should
it's
really
because of
tell them
her.
that it's very motivating.
They know. All of them know. I think the only one wasn't in the trash can was Lana. And it's because I wasn't involved in that part at that time. I was probably doing a podcast. But tomorrow is eight people. I didn't touch any of them this time. So I didn't put anyone in the trash can. My wife just selected them all, and we're going to go interview all eight tomorrow. And if it's zero that we find, we won't hire and we'll do another interview like next week. Then if we find two people that are really good, I'll have the entire team interview both and see what they think. And if they all like both, then we'll hire both. And if they don't like one, this happened last time. We found two people, and then we had the rest of the coordinator interview them a second interview, and the team didn't like one of the two that we selected. So we only hired
Okay.
one. We only hired one. It's very
Wow.
important because it just, with a small team, the wrong person will make people want to quit, will make people, you know, go do something else, less motivated. So you got it. When you have a small team, it's super important to be very methodical in how you hire. So that's how we select. Once we find that person, like I put them under my wing. At that point, I become like friend, like very friendly. My weakness is like I'm too nice to my staff. That's my weakness. But because of that, I know how I am. That's why I put everyone in the trash initially, because I know it's a lot of effort. So I don't actually want to do it. That's the thing. But once they're hired, it's like my goal. Even after they leave, I still give them advice. Hey, you should go apply here. You should go. I still communicate with former staff. Like they text me advice. I want to start a site. I have a good relationship with 90% of my former staff.
Sounds great.
Not everyone loves me, but like the majority. We have a good working relationship even after they no longer work. And a few of them even become like business partner, like Monica Cuitiva, who runs CRC Academy, Latinos in Clunker Research. We got to get you on that thing too, Latinos in Clunker Research. But she was a coordinator of mine, and then she became a business partner. So I know the dedication it's going to take on my part. That's why initially everyone goes in trash. But that's why. But luckily, I have a wife who takes people out of the trash can.
So she's doing the important job for you.
Yeah, and when you need to have like a conversation, hey, you know what? You're not pulling your weight, or what's been going on this last week? You know, I'll have those talks. But when things are not getting improved, she has those more difficult conversation with them, because I'm like too much of a friend. I think, and that's the problem. That's the side effect of working with them side by side, is like they forget you're a boss, and it's good and bad to that, but it's how I've been my whole career.
I definitely feel your pain, and I completely agree on that. I also tend to be extremely friendly with my sites, well, most of my sites, to that extent that we go on lunch together on Sunday and stuff like that. And sometimes it might not be the best strategy because, after all, you need to get work done. And
But
so.
I found that if I do that and then I have to have a serious conversation with one of them, they actually take it seriously, because they're like, wow, I mean, he never actually does this. So they do a lot of, if you hire the right person, they will respond the right way to the serious conversations. Every now and then I have to have, you know, maybe once a month. Hey, you know what? You haven't, like, what's going on? I mean, we're here to have fun. I want you guys to have fun, but why are these patients not getting called on time? Like, do you need me to hire someone else, or I'll do it? And they're usually like, no, sorry, you know, yeah, you're right. And then they shape up. But it's every now and then I'm getting better. When I first started, terrible. Like 15, 19 years ago, terrible. But I think as I'm older, I get better at that too.
Was it extremely overwhelming to start your first site?
Oh yeah, I have hypertension because of it. I was 25 with hypertension, and I went to the doctor. I'm like, I don't know why I'm 25. I shouldn't have, like, it was like 160 over 90. I'm like, why am I blood pressure like this? And he's like, I don't know. Are you stressed? And I'm like, most likely. So they put me on
Just a
lisinopril.
bit.
Put me on lisinopril from like 25 years old. Like, there's a real sacrifice. I have genetic predisposition to hypertension, but yeah, like it takes a toll on your health. Of course. Like, you know, if I would have just sat home and read books, I probably would have delayed my hypertension for like 5 years, maybe 10. But
Maybe
because I'm
more.
maybe more, but because I'm active and monitors are yelling and, you know, like the site was a disaster when I took over.
Monitors are yelling. I've
Monitors
never
were
yelled in my
yelling.
life.
But this was
Not even
2000.
once.
This was 2005. I noticed a change in monitor attitude after the Great Recession of 2008, 2009. I noticed monitors being much more friendly, like you. Pre-Great Financial Crisis, half of them were mean, like cold. Like I had one rip off things off my wall in my office. Like she's like, this doesn't go there. I had a schedule of assessment on the wall so that I,
Oh,
like, when a patient comes, I could look really quickly, right? And see what. This was before eSource. And she's like, no, that doesn't go there, and took it out, like rip it off. I'm
that's
like,
impressive.
yeah, but I was brand new, so I thought this was normal. I was like, okay, maybe I did something wrong.
Oh,
Like,
poor guy.
it was bad, I'm telling you. But everything I learned in that first 3 years helped for the YouTube channel. And
Yeah.
that's when I felt like, okay, I mean, other people are probably starting now. Let's teach them how to do this. But initially, the YouTube was to get patients, but that didn't work. Within 2 months, I learned that that failed. No patient was watching. The only people watching were other sites. So I made a video, what is an informed consent? What is an IRB? I thought
Yeah.
patients would want to be interested. No patient cared. The only people cared were coordinators. Hey, thank you for that. Can you make one on this?
Yeah.
So then I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should just make videos for the researchers instead of patients. And that's how the YouTube channel started.
I have to say, your 5 hour long video on Crash Course on
Ah,
clinical
man.
trials, I really can't tell you how many times I
That
rewatched this one.
was a pain to make and a pain to upload, but we got it done. We're thinking of doing a revise of that in a few years, but right now
You
it's still,
definitely
I think it's still
should.
good.
Please keep the whiteboard. I really liked it.
The whiteboard? Okay, I'll do the whiteboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll keep the whiteboard. But yeah, we're thinking of doing it. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about this, the future of our industry. There's a lot of changes coming, but I think those changes are good. I've seen the industry improve for the better. Like I said, the monitors are pleasant now. The
Also, there is no more
technology.
paper CRF.
No more paper C. I came with the first study I did, paper CRF.
Me
Oh,
too.
05, and then after that, everything EDC. So yeah, I
Remember
remember that.
my first study was actually on paper CRF, so I did not get to work with electronic CRF as a monitor until I started with PSI. Before that, I used to monitor everything on paper and also to data collect all of the information in the trunk of my car.
Wow, it's an unbelievable how that was
Oh,
like
yeah.
considered okay.
Fun times.
What about eSource in Europe? Do they use have they adopted eSource and e-regulatory, or is it mostly paper?
It's only paper at this point, they are talking about it. But right now, some of these sites are actually adopting electronic on-site file, which is groundbreaking. But yeah, still no electronic source file and no
Okay.
electronic ICF, which is something really great that I'm looking forward to. I know that in the US they're using it a
Yeah,
lot,
we're
but
using it.
here, not yet.
We use
Not
eSource,
yet.
eReg, eConsent, although sometimes the coordinators still prefer paper consent. I think it's because of the patients. But eSource, eReg, for sure. We have like
Wow.
90% electronic, only a few paper, like lab results. PI still likes to sign by hand. ECG,
They
you know.
like to sign by hand?
The PI, yeah. They want to see the. They don't want to log into a
Right.
website. They want to see, like,
Yeah.
you bring them, here you go. You know, they want,
Yeah.
like a restaurant.
But yeah, all of these things right now, it's like you're coming from the future.
Yeah. Because, it's going to happen over there, too. Creo is a really good one. They're a sponsor of the show, too. CRIO.
Nice.
Yeah. I like them a lot. They're cool. They're always working on innovation, patient database, paying patients with debit cards instead of cash, automatic invoicing. It's really cool. It make my life easier as a site owner.
Yes, I can imagine. Actually, I'm very much pushing forward towards this direction, and I've always come up to my bosses with bright ideas how to include this innovation or that innovation. I feel like I'm pain in their asses.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, Maya would be a good person to collaborate with because she's amazing from the few
Yeah.
podcasts I've done with her.
Yeah, she's all about digitalization and
Oh,
innovation
yeah. Well, she likes it too
and the
much.
bright future ahead us.
She lives in the future. I've been on her podcast too. She lives
Yeah,
in
I've
the
seen it.
future. I mean, I'm like an earthling compared to her. She's like in the outer space. So, yeah, I'm not that
Yeah,
much
she's a comet.
technology. She is. I'm not like that. You know, I want to, the tech has to make sense. I'm not going to go out of my way to prove a tech is useful. If you prove it, I'll use it. Right, but I'm not gonna, unless I'm an advisor, then I would work with it. But otherwise, I'm not gonna try just because you say it's a good idea. No, show me like in real life how this works. I have staff that I, if I give them this and they don't like it, they're gonna quit. So no,
Yeah.
you make sure it works before you have me check it out.
Actually, I really love that you're saying that because right now I do have an idea that I'm testing on and working on. It's a
Ah.
yeah, but it's still in extremely early stage.
We got
So
entrepreneur in the house.
I'd still like to check, well, precisely that if it's going to make coordinators and monitors' job easier or not, or PI's job in general. So once it's more or less ready, I'd love for you to test it. So
Yeah.
I'll ping you later.
No, for sure. I love that kind of stuff. Especially if you go the startup route. I'm interested in those things like advisory stuff.
I definitely keep that in mind. Yeah, it's an idea I'm exploring.
Yep. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Look, everybody needs to go connect with Tihomira right now. LinkedIn, her LinkedIn's underneath. And if you're listening on the podcast, same thing. Go connect. Entrepreneur spirit, CRA, probably going to be doing all kinds of things for the next few decades in our space. CRA wizard, if you need help and you're in Europe, I mean, everybody go connect with her right now. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll do a part two at some point in the future. Like, subscribe,
I'd love
comment,
that.
share. Bye-bye, guys.